Hello, everyone. My name is John Williams, and I'm the Chief Executive of the Institute of Leadership and Management. And I welcome you to our monthly podcast show, Leadership at the Edge, where we share ideas across the community of leadership practice in every context, everywhere. Each month, I'm joined by senior leaders from around the world to discuss their real-life experiences, to challenge some of the outdated leadership practices, and to offer a fresh take on the issues that today's leaders face. We invite you to join the conversation via social media using the hashtag Leadership at the Edge, or to send a voice message via the podcast page on Anchor with your questions to our guest. To register for future podcasts and events, visit our website, institutelm.com, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast series and leave a review. In this episode, we'll be discussing the significant and ever-relevant topic of leadership and mental wellness, and I'm privileged to have executive mental health advocate Nick Johnson as my guest. Co-founder and managing director of one of Asia's premier networking safe haven organizations, Nick has a passion for mental health awareness due to his own experiences, paving the way to become a number one international best-selling author with Executive Loneliness, The Five Pathways to Overcoming Isolation, Stress, Anxiety and Depression in the Modern Business World. Nick has worked across Asia, Australia and Europe, featuring in numerous media publications and winning the Entrepreneurs 100 Award 2011. And he was also named one of Asia Pacific's 50 leading lights on World Kindness Day in 2021 due to his charitable and fundraising efforts with the Samaritans. So who better to share their expert insights and advice, bringing the discussion of leadership and mental wellness very much to the forefront? Nick, welcome to you.
Well, thank you so much, John, for inviting me. And thank you again also for covering this topic, which perhaps has a lot of stigma attached to it. So pleasure to be here.
You're absolutely right. It does still, and I think surprisingly in this day and age, have a lot of stigma attached to it. And I think it's really important for us where we can to try and diffuse and mitigate some of that. And actually, of course, I guess some of that stigma comes from this very old phrase that we used to hear a lot, which is, it's lonely at the top. Tell us, how true do you think that is in real terms?
Well, I looked into this topic, John, and I have to say that my findings are also that it is indeed lonely at the top. And if we think about it, perhaps the career path almost like a hierarchy still, or a pyramid in that sense that, you know, the higher up you go the ladder, the less people you will have at the same seniority of at your level. So in that sense, perhaps, you know, when you were in middle management, there might be more people you can go and have a lunch break with, people who are at your seniority level, you can discuss with them and so on. And you basically have the same job descriptions and you can discuss. But at the top, then there's no one perhaps who you can discuss, no one else who have your unique challenges. Yep. So you're also perhaps paid, you're expected to do, you know, the hard job, you're expected to handle the heat when it gets stressful. So indeed, yes.
Yeah, this word expectations really is a powerful driver, actually. And I guess it's also a powerful driver of fear, which is we're afraid to say, I don't know what to do, or I can't do this, and therefore carry all of that weight inside us. How do you think we help leaders in the first instance to try and get over some of that?
Well, I certainly think that many of these things have to start from the top, and it's about leaders themselves daring to be vulnerable. We need to create a company culture where it's okay to share that you're not okay, and it's okay to be, you know, talking about our families and our ups and downs in life. Because if the leader does that, then the rest of the team does. But if the leader doesn't talk about what's happening in their life, we cannot expect the team and the culture to change. So therefore, while it is lonely at the top, this has to change at the top also. It only takes for the leader at the top then to start opening up and sharing some things that's going on. And what I've seen is that quite rapidly, the changes actually filter through the organization.
Oh, that's quite an interesting point, actually. Yes, the permission, if I use that word, to be vulnerable, to let people know that things are not going terribly well, that's given by the people at the top. The speed of the cascade of that, I guess you're saying, is actually much faster than we might expect.
Yes, John, I have seen it firsthand during the pandemic because I started to write the book before the pandemic and I finished it and it was released a little bit more of a year ago. And what I saw then was certainly that for some of the executives who were part of the book, who I interviewed for the book, and I encouraged them to go back and be a bit vulnerable in the organization and see what's happening. Mm. And the response was fantastic. They came back to me and said, you know, that for the first time, you know, they really felt connected themselves to the team. And they said that the other team members started opening up and about sharing about what they were going through during the lockdowns and so on. So the conversation became very warm, very inclusive, and suddenly, you know, this was more of an open door policy in the organization.
Right. Okay. And that, of course, is sort of like a nirvana for organizations, really, that everybody shares, not just I'm having problems, but actually everybody shares all forms of communication. Just picking up on that, you used the word culture before, which, of course, is crucially important in all organizations. And just thinking about that, this culture of courage, I guess, which we want to see shared by the top leadership. We at the Institute often say that leadership is everywhere, in everybody at every level. How do you think that the loneliness that's associated with leadership can be felt at other levels within an organization?
It can certainly be felt at every level, and especially so in an organization where the culture is not so open. But I would also even take a step back. I mean, if we think back to the days when we went to school, we are there to compete with each other. We get given a grade, we're giving scholarships, we're getting rewards and awards for being the top students, you know. So we have this almost like a competition, and we bring this with us into the workplace. And you will have some people who naturally want to get ahead of the game. They will perhaps work through the lunch break, sitting, having a small salad by their desk so they can get ahead. And while you have some others who will group up together, they go out for lunch break and socialize together. And naturally, then the person perhaps who is isolating themselves in the office to get ahead, to impress the bosses, will perhaps start feeling isolated. Perhaps their colleagues start talking around the back on them and so on, and jealousy is happening. So in that sense, this is happening everywhere. And it's about everyone then deciding to perhaps, you know, for themselves to really try to be inclusive themselves. But again, it starts from the top. Also, the company needs to set the scene and the boss needs to set the scene.
Right. And do you think that part of that is setting a culture, albeit competitive, on behalf of the organization, also internally, that part of that competition culture says it's okay not to win?
Yes, it's very important to have that kind of culture as well, that we not only recognize people who are always delivering at the top and so on, because these high achievers might be the ones who are with you for a while and then they move on. We also need stability in the company, and we need these warm people who are inclusive, who also make other people feel at home.
Yes, that the principle of stability is quite an interesting one in the current climate, I guess. So we see quite a lot of churn in a lot of organizations, people moving around for new opportunities or whatever it is. Do you think there's a likelihood that some of that churn might actually work against trying to achieve this stability in an organization?
Yes, definitely. We live in a gig economy now. The times when someone worked 30 years and got a gold watch in the company, those are gone, right? So it's very different, and it's very transactional. And people, and I, you know, at every level, decide that if they feel that this is not really when my values are aligned and it can be related to sustainability, diversity, and inclusion, if they just feel the leadership is not talking my language, I cannot be part of it anymore, then they quickly leave, right? So in that sense, it's a completely different world now. And I see even companies like LinkedIn now on social media are creating functions where you can now set, you know, your profile as you're between work, and they're creating symbols for it and so on. And suddenly it's okay to take a career break. It's almost expected that we need from time to time stand up for ourselves and say, no, this is not for me.
Right, really interesting, because what, in a way, what that indicates is from an organizational perspective, organizations may need to increasingly offer values as part of their proposition for people. So that will become a competitive advantage even more than we have seen it up to now. Is that fair, do you think?
Yes, but it's also that it's very difficult for a leader to do that because they have to right. walk the talk. Mm-hmm. Because if they are saying that they are a vegan and then you see them the next night on social media having a steak, it's not going to work in their favor, right? So that sense, we have to be very careful with the promises we do as a leader because people will hold you accountable mm-hmm. and we cannot tie these days.
No, that's true. And that brings us back to one of the Institute's five values, and that's authenticity. And this is, I have to say, this is a word when I first started hearing it a lot, I felt very twitchy about it because it almost sounded like a fake made up thing. But of course, it's not only the opposite of that. It requires us to be authentic in a sensible way, I guess, really. And is it true, do you think, to say that authenticity needs to encompass that vulnerability rather than saying we are authentically a hard driving business?
Yes, it really needs to be you. We no longer can try to put on this smiling facade. You know, I call in my book a smiling depression. For many senior leaders who put on this beautiful outside, but inside it doesn't hold together. Those days are also gone. We need to really, you know, do something which we really like. I mean, like myself, I find myself running marathons and so on. Mm-hmm. And everyone in my company know that that's the authentic me. I put in effort to take other people out exercising, but I'm also volunteering in that space for races and things like that. So they will see, okay, he's doing something good for himself. He's doing something for the community. He's there if I need some coaching advice around nutrition or exercise. And that is my space. I don't have to fake that. I don't have to put a stamp saying I'm being authentic because it has to be so natural.
Really, that's interesting because there are almost four different areas there in which your authenticity expresses itself. It's in being yourself. It's being yourself for the company. So it's the real you that you bring to the business. It's the real you that you bring to your team personally on that, and also to the community of which you are a part. So it's quite a responsibility because it's not. It's just you being you. Very challenging for a lot of leaders, of course.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, if it's related to sustainability and there's some big aggressive targets which the company set up, you know, mm-hmm. you need to really think for yourself and ask yourself before you put your signature to that, can I really live up to that? Or is it better to be then more honest and say, this is our vision, we are moving towards this. But even maybe no one really knows the journey yet. Just try to not overpromise. That's my message here.
That's excellent. Yeah. Now, just thinking a bit specifically about mental well-being at the leadership level, how can we ensure that leaders recognize the need and take the time to achieve and maintain their own well-being to start with?
Well, I would say for a start there, it's very important to remember that physical health is very linked to mental health. So we need to look after ourselves physically, and that may mean having a good diet, exercise, and sleep. I would say that's the foundation for being mentally fit, mm-hmm. but then also have some space in our lives, connect from digital devices to make sure we have some offline time. May that be combined, that you go for a walk in the forest or whatever it be. You need that downtime. Call it meditation or whatever it is. And that is the responsibility of any leader. We need to really also, again, lead by example, setting the scene here and, you know, and making sure that our colleagues and people around us also get that space and give them that space and encourage it and not penalize someone if they're not responding to emails at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. and really...
Yes.
To put those, again, parameters around the work life, because the devices are following us around everywhere. And this, again, goes back to the top. If the boss will keep sending emails 24/7, then surely the colleagues will be chased and you will see replies around the clock.
Yeah. And we do all see that. And I remember myself actually even being criticized once in the organization I then worked for sending emails at 4:30 in the morning. And I was quite surprised. So I thought, well, nobody needs to answer it at 4:30 in the morning. And the reply was, actually, the example you're setting means that some people will feel they have to. And I had not been self-aware enough to recognize that. And I guess one of the things that we now expect of leaders is that degree of self-awareness, which itself is quite hard, actually, in leadership.
Yes, it is. And even if we don't expect someone to answer the email at that time, at least you suddenly become on top of their mind or their awareness. And maybe mm-hmm. that's what that they're going to think about that. So we need to be quite aware, quite responsible. Perhaps also work is in more intense perhaps than it has been before. Perhaps it's more transactions, more pressure. So mm-hmm. we all need to be quite concerned about each other and care for each other at the same time. Then if we care for others, naturally our own well-being will come as well.
Yeah, indeed. And especially within a team or within an organization where there's almost, I guess, a norm of well-being that develops within an organization, as you mentioned earlier on. How do we talked about how we ensure leaders recognize the need and take the time. How do we ensure, even where the example is being set, that actually the other members of a team will take the time? Because we can't force people often to take time off, for example.
No, we can definitely not force people. The only thing we can do is lead by example and just keep encouraging people, giving them room and space and encouraging it. Of course, we can also give allowances. We can give contacts. I know more and more companies now who perhaps work with a therapist or psychologist to mm-hmm. set up, you know, a retain agreement X amount of hours, and the staff have a perhaps access to this you know, anonymous phone number, and they can call yep. and get support. And so just to provide the service that it's available if you need it, that's showing the care already. Mm-hmm. Then at the end of the day, it's up to the people themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose is there a way, this just popped into my head, is there a way to reward behaviors which support mental well-being? For example, if we have well-being phone lines and things, anonymous phone lines in our organization, we encourage employees to use them. If somebody needs to, in inverted commas, and they don't, is there a way to reward the rest of the team for encouraging them to do that?
Well, I would say when it comes to mental health, what I have found is that if someone, including myself, when I went through challenging times, I didn't get support fast enough. But when I got it, I felt so great. Mm. It's almost like if you go to a doctor and you're very ill and you get the right medicine and you can feel after 24 hours that it's working.
Yep.
I would say with mental health, it's more instant. It's more instant that you go in and you see a psychologist, they talk you through it. And normally you will leave like something have left your shoulders. You will feel so great mm-hmm. right away. So I think for anyone who's been there, the reward is there instant. And I hope that also these people will share it with other team members. And that is an important encouragement, but maybe not after the first session that they are brave enough to do it. Mm-hmm. But we should encourage people who actually go and get mental health support to share about it and dare to say that, you know, I saw a therapist, I saw a psychologist. And again, this also can be shared from the top that, you know, if yep. the senior management also book in sessions
yep.
and we need to see this as it's as okay to go and see a therapist or psychologist as it is to get a dental checkup. There's no difference there. And
right.
that is where we
right.
need to come to.
Yeah, I remember an instance some years ago now, actually, where the chief exec of a very, very large bank, Lloyds Bank, I think it was, took some time off for stress. And I remember thinking, what a fabulous signal to everybody else in the financial services sector that actually it's okay to take some time off for stress because that's what they live through. I think that what you've just said really brings to mind again this idea of creating a culture of openness so that people who have experienced some support and feel good about it can then feel that it's okay to talk about that fact and that they will be viewed positively, actually, for having taken the steps to try and heal themselves, I guess. But as you said, there's a parallel there with the physicality. We often reward people for coming back after they've been ill. Say, oh, it's great to see you back. You're absolutely great, marvelous. How's your leg now? And stuff like this. Mm. But we very rarely see that in terms of mental health. It would be perhaps good if we could.
Yes, John. And I interviewed people for my book, I also went to interview psychologists and therapists and so on. And what I did was in the waiting area, when I waited to come and see them at their location, I checked on Facebook if there was somewhere to check in, you know. And there was only one or two or three people in the history who had checked in that they had been there. But of course, if you go to the local restaurant on the corner, or you go to a beauty salon, there will be tens of thousands of check-in. So it just shows that no one want to check in and say that I'm having a good afternoon here, seeing my psychologist. You know,
yes.
Not there yet. We have a long way to go, I think, John.
Yeah. I think that's true. And thinking about that, what might be some of the signs that we could look for when a leader's mental well-being is not actually being given sufficient attention?
Well, what I learned when I wrote the book and through the surveys and interviews and so on was the things we can look out for. Specifically tend to be weight loss or gaining of weight. That tend to be a very clear signal. It could also be if the person is suddenly losing interest in a hobby. If you're married to someone who have cooked pasta every Wednesday evening for as long as you can remember, suddenly it's not there. Or maybe you have a partner who played the guitar and suddenly they have not touched the guitar for a few months. All these kind of changes in behavior, basically, where it shows that the person have probably lost complete the passion, they lost the hope, they lost something. Those are some of the signals to look for, because it's not easy to spot it otherwise on the people, because most of us we are so good at covering up.
And interesting, because those are deep pattern changes. Of course, if we create a new deep pattern, which is not readable because of what we're going through, then actually that would camouflage the deep pattern changes otherwise. Is there a way, do you think, to, and that's really, really helpful, actually, that illustration of how to spot signs. Is there a way to spot those signs within a team, for example, either within the individuals or within the team itself? Because teams also have a psychology.
Well, this is a tricky one. And I would say that, you know, if someone isolate themselves, if they don't show up for when you have a lunch or a coffee meeting, or they don't show up for the social gatherings with the company and so on, or if they don't show up in the office, but that is also a bit tricky now when we're just coming through a pandemic. It has been much easier for people to hide. It's been easier for people to isolate themselves without being questioned. But perhaps now it's safe to say that now is the time to come out. Now is the time to break those patterns and come out. And I know it's difficult for introverts, especially perhaps, but we need to get outside of our comfort zone. We need to connect. We are, after all, you know, human beings who need to be connected with other people. So it's very important to get outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, we are social animals, actually, as human beings. Yeah, and so we should maybe then be encouraging people, even where companies, because there are some companies, our own included, that have actually given up having an office and have become effectively virtual or indeed even hybrid. We should be nevertheless encouraging people, whether it's back into the office, it should at least be encouraging them to connect physically, face to face, with the team members and other members of the organization.
And we give allowances for that reason, for example, to the teams. We encourage them to go and book some sessions for themselves, may it be everything from a cooking class together to a sports game or a dinner or karaoke night together. That is super important, more important than ever before, because we don't spend so much time together. We need to connect from time to time with our colleagues.
Right. So team time is absolutely vital. Now, thank you very much. This is a really, really not just interesting. Interesting is too slight a word for it. This is a really important conversation and a conversation piece. Just before we finish, Nick, what would be your top tip, the inevitable top tip question? What would be your top tip for leaders wanting to ensure mental well-being for themselves and right across their teams?
Well, it's sort of almost what I said also before here, John, that we have to lead ourselves as a leader before we can lead others. It comes back to this again, being the authentic leader, being vulnerable, daring to talk up, you know, show that you care, listen to your staff and employees when they have a difficult time, set up this culture where no one will be penalized for for saying if they're going through a difficult time, give them some time off, but also take time off yourself. And also, as you, John, said about the CEO who took some time off for stress, it's okay to raise the hand. I'm not feeling well. I need to take a day off. I will be back in full energy the next time. And, you know, but this is a give and take. And also, John, as you mentioned that you don't have the office anymore. And therefore, we have to have more trust. We have to trust our employees more. And this goes both ways. You know, we need to be more responsible as human beings, and I think people will be responsible to your company and to your leader if the leader themselves have shown that they are to be trusted.
Excellent, Nick, thank you. And I do remember actually one of my former employers calling me one day and saying, where are you? And I said, I'm just about to go into a client. Why? And he said, oh, I haven't seen you for a while. I don't know what you do all day. And I thought that was an illustration of absolutely no trust whatsoever. But so, and we do need to exhibit trust. So, Nick, thank you so much. A number of the words that have come out of this conversation, like expectations, like courage, culture, competition, because we're all in competition, the fact that these life is transactional, the importance of values and the importance of authenticity in the behaviors of leadership. A superb illustration and a superb introduction, I think, for many people to the importance of this subject. Thank you, Nick. Well, that's it, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. My special thanks to our guest, Nick Johnson. Thank you very much indeed, Nick. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you, John.
And thank you to you, the audience, for listening. Please do join the conversation via social media using the hashtag Leadership at the Edge, or send a voice message via the podcast page on Anchor. For more of our podcasts and events and lots of other content, visit the website www.institutelm.com. Subscribe to the podcast series, leave a review, and mention us to your colleagues. Thank you very much indeed again, Nick, and thank you everyone for listening.